I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Today's episode is sponsored by ByHeart, which is an infant nutrition company built from the ground up to deliver real innovation on behalf of babies and parents. Their mission is simple: make the best formula in the world. In our house, we never skim on family time together on the weekends. Instead of racing around crazy, we prioritize time at home, time to relax, time to do fun, crazy things that we wouldn't have ordinarily. And you know who else doesn't skim? ByHeart. ByHeart is the only American-made infant formula with globally sourced ingredients to use organic, grass-fed whole milk without a drop of skim. Whole milk is full of healthy fats like naturally occurring MFGM, which play an important role in babies' brain development and growth. Are you curious about ByHeart? Redeem your welcome offer at byheart.com/podcast with codename Zibby20 for a limited time.
Hi, I'm Zibby Owens, and I am the host of this podcast, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. I am also a newly minted USA Today bestselling author of the novel Blank. I've created a whole community of book lovers around this podcast, a publishing company, reading retreats, a bookstore, and more. Learn more at zibbymedia.com or follow me on social at Zibby Owens or join the community at Zibby Readers. Karis Davies is the author of Clear, a novel. Karis's debut novel, West, was shortlisted for the Rathbones Folio Prize, runner-up for the Society of Authors McKittrick Prize, and winner of the Wales Book of the Year for Fiction. She is also the author of The Mission House, which was the Sunday Times London 2020 Novel of the Year, and two collections of short stories, Some New Ambush and The Redemption of Galen Pike, which won the Frank O'Connor International Short Story Award and the Gerwood Fiction Uncovered Prize. Her other awards include the Royal Society of Literature's V.S. Pritchett Prize, the Society of Authors Olive Cook Short Story Award, and a Coleman Fellowship at the New York Public Library. Born in Wales, she lived and worked for 12 years in New York and Chicago, and now lives in Edinburgh. Clear is her most recent novel. Welcome, Karis. Thank you so much for coming on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books to discuss your novel, Clear. Congratulations.
Thank you for having me.
This is a beautiful work of literature. I mean, it really feels like that. Like it's almost a surprise it's coming out today. Do you know what I mean? It feels like it could have come out 100 years ago. I don't know when. I mean, it's like timeless. There's a timeless, beautiful quality to it, and it's very impressive. So anyway, just thought I'd start with that.
Thank you.
Can you tell listeners what your book is about?
Sure. So Scotland, 1843, and Scottish landowner Henry Lowry is evicting small tenants from his estate to make the land clear for sheep grazing. And when an impoverished, newly married Presbyterian church minister, John Ferguson, comes into his orbit looking for some paid work, Lowry reckons that Ferguson could be just the man to clear the last remaining inhabitant of a very remote small island off the far north coast of Scotland, which belongs to the estate. And although John's wife, Mary, has misgivings about the whole task. She really isn't at all sure that John should be going off to do it. They say their goodbyes at the gloomy granite harbour in Aberdeen, and John sets off armed with a month's worth of provisions, the official summons of removing in his pocket, and a pistol he's been given that he hardly knows how to use. And needless to say, things don't go smoothly.
I love this idea of the picture of his wife when he falls, and then how, I'm not explaining this right. Hold on, let me get their names right. But basically, and it's not a daguerreotype, it's another kind of photo that I wasn't even as familiar with that you described. What was it?
It's called a calotype. Essentially, I mean, a very early kind of photograph that had just been developed. And actually, when I first, what happens is that, well, I don't think it's too much of a spoiler to say there's an accident, and this calotype that John is carrying of Mary gets lost and is found by Ivor. And when I was first sort of feeling my way into the story, I wrote this scene, and it was a miniature of Mary that I imagined Ivor finding. And this is the really extraordinary thing I always find that happens with historical fiction. Once you've landed in a moment in time, and suddenly everything seems to sort of converge on. So I was in this year, 1843, and suddenly everything seems to be happening in that time. So I was looking at the development of early photography in Scotland, in Edinburgh, and there were two pioneers, David Hill and his young partner, and they were developing this method called the calotype. And the idea that Ivor would be looking at, Ivor's the inhabitant of the island, would be looking at a photograph, you know, somebody who's lived like him in this immense solitude. I just thought that would be so powerful to see this thing, which looked sort of like a physical two-dimensional person, was very powerful.
Totally. I know. It's in the scene, it's like, he's like, this is more real than his, you know, wife or, you know, his mother. Yeah. I don't know. It's like the idea that you could have gone your life without having seen a photograph and then see one. That's wild. It's a wild thing. But
yes, well, it's same. I mean, because he's been alone now for, he's in his 40s. He's been alone since he was in his early 20s. His mother and his grandmother and his sister-in-law were the last people to leave the island. So, you know, this photograph is so much more real than his memories now of the people that he loved.
My goodness. Well, just the way you write, I mean, not, I think the accident was so early on. It's, I mean, but the way even you write about pain and a broken ankle, or just all these little details that you give for each of your scenes makes them jump off the page. And tell me a little bit about your training in writing, and then how you arrive at a story like this about a moment in time, like why this moment in time, why these people, like how did your imagination go there? Why this book? I don't know. It's a marvel, but tell me more.
Well, so I'll take the first part of the question. It's when I began to write fiction, I began to write short stories. I was actually living in the United States back in the early 90s, and I began reading all the great American short story writers, Flannery O'Connor, John Cheever, Eudora Welty, Grace Paley, and I was completely blown away. I hadn't read them before and just thought, this is what I want to do. And I was really drawn to that concision. You know, there's so much power in brevity, and you know what's between the lines, and also that, you know, especially somebody like Flannery O'Connor, you know, that mix of tragedy and comedy, and pain and joy. I thought this is where I want to be. So for the first couple of decades of my career, I only wrote short stories. And when I wrote my first novel, West, I thought it was a short story. And it was the longest short story I'd ever written. It was about 10,000 words. And then I sort of put it away in a drawer and thought, yes, that's finished. And then I got it out a few months later and I thought, how could I have thought that that works as a short story? It just doesn't. It's sort of, it feels both overburdened and abbreviated. It's just, I love the story, but I knew I needed to tell it in a different way. So I started writing a novel. I didn't know how to write a novel, but I sort of taught myself, and it was a really thrilling experience. I don't approach my novels differently from the way I approach short stories. It's just that every story is as long or as short as it needs to be, and you just have to sort of feel your way into that. So I think writing short stories for so long, I think, you know, my craft developed in such a way that it makes me a certain kind of writer, and I still love the power of brevity and concision and sudden changes and juxtapositions and all those things. And this, to answer the second part of your question, this story came in quite an unusual way. I mean, I do believe that you can't really go looking for stories. You know, they find you, you don't find them. But with this story, it happened about 10 years ago. I was working in the lovely old reading room in the library in Edinburgh, and I got up to take a break, and I was browsing the shelves, and I found this old dictionary. And it was a dictionary of an extinct language I'd never heard of before, called Norn, which used to be spoken on the islands of Orkney and Shetland in the far north of Scotland, there off the northeast coast. And the islands used to belong to Denmark. And then in the middle of the 15th century, the Danish king pawned the islands to Scotland. And slowly over the century, this old language was pushed out by Scots, which is a kind of dialect of this sort of English Scots. It's a sort of different language. And so over a 10-year period, I just went back to this dictionary over and over again because I just loved the words. They were so rich and so specific. You know, so many of them described the sea and the clouds and the fog and the weather, but also a kind of almost feudal way of life. And I knew there was a story there, but I just didn't know what it was. But eventually I realized that I could sort of see Ivar. Could see this man on an island. I knew he was alone, and I knew he was probably the very last speaker of this extinct language. And I thought that conceivably this could put him somewhere in the middle of the 19th century, which then led me into the whole history of what was happening in Scotland at that time, where the land was being cleared by the big landowners to make way for sheep, and people like Ivar were being evicted from their homes. So that's how it happened. But it was always, it's a novel. I really wrote the story. A lot of the research I sort of did afterwards. I think with historical fiction, you've always got to be careful not to just get too swamped in research. So I prefer to try and grasp what's sort of fleeting and intimate and human and emotional first, you know, grasp that. And so I wrote this book really out of the words in the dictionary. That was what I used to try and get myself into Ivar's head and create his island and his life and the way he... His fierce attachment to the place.
Amazing.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time.
That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thing. When you're writing, how much do you go back and revise later versus making sure every sentence is right? Because every sentence feels quite deliberate.
Yeah, I mean, a lot. It's a very, I never used to know what writers meant when they sort of talked about, well, I did this draft and then I did this draft and this draft and this. It never really feels like that to me. It feels like total chaos. Until it doesn't. And that usually comes when I know how to begin. And that with this book starts with where John is in a storm and he's approaching the island. And once I'd written that scene and he was there, then I wrote the rest of the book in a very sort of intense period of a few months. But I'd been thinking about it for, as I said before, for about 10 years. So, and then, yes, and then I go over and over and back. And then finally, when I'm still sort of, you know, fiddling with commas, and then I think, okay, I think it's done.
Are you at work on anything else now?
I'm always at work. I'm always thinking about stories. I always have a few things sort of bubbling away at once, and just I'm at that and before one sort of, you know, comes to the surface and you know announces itself as the one. So I think I know which one that is, but I'm still at the slightly sort of bubbling away stage.
Sounds good. Do you have advice for aspiring authors?
It's so hard to say, you know, be patient, but really, you know, it's a marathon, not a sprint. You know, I know some writers do, they write a book, it's their first book and it's fantastic. But that was not, you know, not my experience. It's been a very kind of long road, but, you know, just try and just read and learn, and just know that, you know, those periods of despair where you feel you're not getting anywhere, that's, you know, that's all really is. Nothing is wasted. You know, you are making progress even when you absolutely feel like you're not. So you just have to keep doing it. There's no other way. And you know, you have to be patient on the page, and you also have to be patient in terms of where you feel you're going professionally, you know, and try not to think about that too much.
Is this where you thought you would be at this point in your life?
I don't know. What did I think? I don't know. I don't think I ever really dared hope. I really did just go from story to story. And, you know, each little success was such a, I remember, you know, when I was writing short stories, if I got one short story published in a year, that was absolutely enough to, you know, to keep me going. So, yeah, I don't think I ever had a vision of what shape life would take. You know, you just take each story and try and make it the best it can be, and hope that somebody might be interested in reading it.
And I think I read that you were a judge of the New York Public Library's prize, the Young Lions Prize. Mm-hmm. How was that? I was a young lion for many years for myself. Oh. Now I'm an old lion, but I was at one point a young lion.
Right. Yeah. Well, it was, judging is always, I really like judging, and I take it very seriously, because, you know, winning a prize or even being shortlisted or any of those things, it's such a huge, it means so much to a writer at any stage in their career. So I take it very seriously. And it's always a real privilege.
Amazing. I judged one thing once and I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't realize this was so much work.
It's so much work.
It's an awful lot of work. And then, you're always comparing apples and oranges too. I mean, so I'm judging a prize at the moment, and it's 800 page novels and then very slender ones. And I think in the end, I think a book has to sort of, give me a shock to the head and the heart, that's all I can say. And it's the one that sort of probably does the best job of that. But yeah. And, you discuss it with your other judges, and sometimes you realize that you haven't given something quite, the shot that you should have. And then you go back and, you change your mind. And yeah.
I love what you just said, that a book has to give you a shock to the head and the heart. I mean, that is all we're looking for. That is summary of what a good book does. So good to have a synopsis, or not a synopsis, a clear sort of, target. Are you reading anything now that you really love?
I'm in a book club with some friends in New York and LA, actually, which we sort of have kept going all the way through the pandemic. So it's always on Zoom. But we only read dead writers. So okay. Just yesterday we did The Prime of Miss Jean Brodie, which all of us had read as teenagers, and now we'd come back to it, and it was so extraordinary because we'd all remembered it as a completely different book. We'd all remembered Jean Brodie as this rather eccentric, rather wonderful teacher that had all her girls in her thrall, and now we went back to it and we realized that she's this sort of manipulative fascist. It was, and I suppose we thought that's probably Muriel Spark's great skill, is that she, when we read it as teenagers, we saw her in the way that young students do see those sorts of maverick teachers. So anyway, it made me admire it even more. And it was also interesting because it's set in Scotland, and she has some, she captures that sort of atmosphere of Edinburgh and, the sort of Calvinist Presbyterian past. And I love what she says about Calvinism as being a terrible joke that we all used to believe in. So now I'm reading another book by her, The Mandelbaum Gate, which is fascinating for other reasons because it's set in Jerusalem in just before the 1967 war. So that's a very interesting book to be reading in our present moment.
Absolutely. Great. Well, Karis, thank you so much. It was a joy to discuss Clear with you. Congratulations. And yeah, thank you for coming on.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, my pleasure. Best of luck. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. If you love it, please leave a review and follow us on social at Zibby Owens and at Zibby Readers.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Ralph's. where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Ralph's worth it every time. Ralph's, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.